Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel and the all-new Opel Crossland. Beauty isn't scared of life.
Philip Boucher-Hayes in for Claire for a couple of days, and I want to go back and take a slightly more detailed look at one of the stories that came up in the news bulletin earlier on. Australian and New Zealand residents are now going to be allowed to travel between the two countries without having to quarantine from the 19th of this month, after they have today announced what they're calling a new two-nation travel bubble. I'm joined on the line by Dr. David Murdoch, infectious diseases expert at the Dean of Otago University and a member of the Technical Advisory Panel for COVID-19, which advises the New Zealand Ministry of Health. Many thanks for speaking to us today, and good evening to you over there. Tell us about this new system. I can't imagine that it's just as straightforward as letting people travel from the 19th. What kind of precautions are there going to be surrounding it?
Yes, good morning, Philip. You're exactly right. This is not just simply opening up the borders. From the 19th of April, there's going to be fairly strict eligibility criteria for this sort of travel between Australia and New Zealand, and it's between particular states in Australia and New Zealand. And it's going to require that travellers have been in one or other country for at least 2 weeks before travelling, just to avoid somebody coming from another country and then going immediately across in the bubble. That travellers are required to have had no COVID test positive within 2 weeks. They have to travel without symptoms of a cold or flu. And there will be special ways of going through airports that keep them secure. And in fact, the flight attendants on the planes they'll be restricted in where they can travel to, just to avoid any opportunity for transmission. So yes, there are quite a few things put in place.
You've had such a success story in New Zealand, and to a slightly lesser extent in Australia, but any cases that there have been associated with foreign travel. Are you not concerned about letting even just the slightest chink appear in your armour?
Yes, and that has been our plan, you know, for over a year now, that basically we will trace any case gets traced and isolated. And yes, I mean, this is we've had a very cautious, precautionary approach, and that will continue, but there is a realisation that we do need to move into this transition period with vaccines being rolled out, with hopefully the end of the pandemic coming, that we need to actually start opening up. And so this is a very cautious approach. And it is with Australia first, and the idea being that if it is successful, there will be other countries, particularly some Pacific nations, that would be extended to. But it could change at any time. This comes with what's called a traffic light system, where green is that the bubble can go ahead. If it's an amber, it means it's could pause. If the case of some transmission linked to borders can occur at one country or another, and that may delay travel for up to 72 hours, or it could actually be stopped. And any cost that is incurred from disrupted travel will be borne by the traveller, and that's been very clear.
What kind of demand would you anticipate for this backwards and forwards between New Zealand and Australia? Is it a plane a day, or is it 10 planes a day?
Oh, normally it is many planes a day. And indeed, if the initial response to the announcement today is any indication, there will be quite a demand on both sides of the Tasman Sea. So we are expecting quite a few Australian visitors. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
To us, looking at it from the outside world, it looks like, you know, another small move back towards normality. But you're already living pretty normal lives as it is. What is your view looking over at our side of the world now?
Well, yes, I think we realise what a fortunate situation we are in, despite the fact that, you know, a lot of our industry, particularly the travel industry, has been severely affected. If you came here and you looked at New Zealand at the moment, public life seems pretty normal. You know, we have large gatherings, and we have done so for quite a period of time. We've only had one nationwide lockdown of 6 weeks last year. We had some more focal lockdowns around Auckland since then, but it's been minimal. So we're very fortunate, and I think it just really underscores the position we have been able to take, and we certainly benefit from being an island nation, of an elimination strategy, very clear, good leadership, clear decision-making, and a real effort to follow the science and be science-informed.
There's a debate going on in this country at the moment about the number of countries and which countries have to quarantine for 2 weeks in a hotel upon arrival by air. Did you take a similar approach in New Zealand, or was it just a one-size-fits-all policy? Everybody coming from anywhere, it doesn't matter where that is, has to quarantine for 2 weeks.
Yes, we've had that for over a year now. Everybody has to quarantine for at least 2 weeks, and that's in managed facilities. That's not just reliant on people's goodwill. That's actually in dedicated, managed, monitored facilities that everyone has to go through that.
And how many facilities, how many rooms did the government dedicate to this?
Gosh, I can't give you the figure off the top of my head, but there are, over 1,000 rooms that have been dedicated in a variety of hotels around the country. I mean, that has been a limitation on the numbers coming in, just having the capacity to manage that. So people have to be able to book into those hotels before they mm-hmm. can get on a plane to come to New Zealand. But yes, I mean, that has been really a cornerstone of the New Zealand response.
And how many cases have you had in the last month?
Well, I think perhaps if I just tell you over the whole pandemic, we've had 2,500 cases and 26 deaths over the whole pandemic. So it is very small compared to many countries. Our population's 5 million, and we only see a handful of cases a week, and they are all picked up at the borders. We haven't had community transmission for some time now.
So when you look at the geographic advantage that the United Kingdom and the Republic of Ireland would have in the European context, political relations obviously are much more complicated because of membership of the European Union. But are you puzzled in New Zealand as to why we weren't able to or didn't choose to pursue a zero COVID strategy?
Well, I think, to be fair, I mean, it's easy looking back. Obviously, and we're all going to learn from this experience, but certainly we have been perplexed at different times about that kind of some of the decision making around the world. But again, I mean, we are all in different situations. But certainly, it was a fairly brave stance by the New Zealand government to take, the strategy that it has. And at the time, it was established. We really didn't know how it was going to pan out, and it's proved to be probably more successful than we'd anticipated, and certainly reinforced what we've done. But yes, it's hard to make judgments because all situations are different, but certainly some of the very clear decision-making we've had and very firm stance we've had has really paid off, and I think that will be and other countries have taken that stance, have done well as also. And the economies in those countries have followed, as recent analyses have shown, that the countries that did adopt an elimination strategy have done better economically.
Dr. David Murdoch, infectious diseases expert at the Dean of Otago University, thank you very much for joining.